had power struggles with some of the administration's more hawkish members, like Donald Rumsfeld and Vice President Dick Cheney. Although he was chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff during the first Gulf War, Secretary Powell has had reservations about this war. But always the good soldier, Powell presented the administration's case against Iraq to the UN in February of last year.
Saddam Hussein has chemical weapons. We must not shrink from whatever is ahead of us.
Fast forward to last Sunday, a very different story.
But it turned out that the sourcing was inaccurate and wrong, and in some cases deliberately misleading.
Political observers say the strains are starting to show. Recent stories paint Powell as a man at odds with the cabinet. In the book Plan of Attack, journalist Bob Woodward suggests Powell was cut out of the loop as President Bush decided to strike Iraq. A recent GQ magazine article says that Powell is frustrated and tired and describes tension between his State Department and the Pentagon. Some of his own friends and members of his staff criticize Donald Rumsfeld and the Defense Department. But is Colin Powell ready to leave the cabinet? He's giving no indication he's ready to go.
I only serve at the pleasure of the president.
Does he like you?
We're great buddies.
That's about all he'd give away. Early this evening, I had a conversation with a senior State Department official who says he is troubled by...
Shut the hell up, colon cancer pile. This nonsense about saying, is Colin Powell ready to leave the administration? Here's the translation. Is colon cancer pile ready to leave the plantation, not the administration? I mean, you heard him himself saying that he's buddies with Boy George. Translated, that means, master's good to me. Where's I gonna find a better master than the one I got at the White House? I'm a good White House Negro. Who has it better than me? What house is better than that? Hey, Rumsfeld, can't we all just get along? And then cancer yapping about Saddam has chemical weapons. And then later on, well, Massa told me he had chemical weapons, but he was misleading me. What's I gonna do? And then this nonsense about cancer always being the good soldier. And he presented the administration's case for war. Translation one last time. Since colon cancer Powell is a good Sambo, he's tap danced to the tune Massa wanted to, him to, even though it was against his own better interests. Since they're throwing them out of the plantation soon enough. You know what time it is. Oh, and don't come around here, because we will burn that ass up. Slave time. Check this out. You're listening to 104.1, 96.3, Santa Cruz, 106.7, Illinois, LUBER.com, the world, slave revolt time. Tonight we're going to shoot our way into... how there's no honor amongst thieves. The Chalabi and Sam split. As shameless as it gets. And then we're going to hit up the ruins of empire. As some NBA players are saying, hey, Olympics? Greece? Terrorism? I don't want to go. So we got all that and a hell of a lot more on 104.1. Slave Revolt.
Now, General Turgeson, what's going on here?
Mr. President, about 35 minutes ago, General Jack Ripper, the commanding general of Burpleson Air Force Base, issued an order to the 34 B-52s of his wing, which were airborne at the time, as part of a special exercise we were holding called Operation Dropkick. Now, it appears that the order called for the planes to... attack their targets inside Russia. The planes are fully armed with nuclear weapons with an average load of 40 megatons each. Now, the central display of Russia will indicate the position of the plane. The triangles are their primary targets. The squares are their secondary targets. The aircraft will begin penetrating Russian radar cover within 25 minutes.
General Turgidson, I find this very difficult to understand. I was under the impression that I was the only one in authority to order the use of nuclear weapons.
That's right, sir. You are the only person authorized to do so. And although I hate to judge before all the facts are in, it's beginning to look like General Ripper exceeded his authority.
It certainly does. Far beyond the point I would have imagined possible.
Well, perhaps you're forgetting the provisions of Plan R, sir.
Plan R?
Plan R is an emergency war plan in which a lower echelon commander may order nuclear retaliation after a sneak attack if the normal chain of command has been disrupted. You approve this, sir, you must remember. Surely you must recall, sir, when Senator Buford made that big hassle about our deterrent lacking credibility. And the idea was for Plan R to be a sort of retaliatory safeguard.
A safeguard?
I admit the human element seems to have failed us here, but the idea was to discourage the rescuers from any hope that they could knock out Washington and yourself, sir, as part of a general sneak attack and escape retaliation because of lack of proper command and control.
Well, I assume then that the planes will return automatically once they reach their fail-safe points.
Well, no, sir, I'm afraid not. You see, the planes were holding at their fail-safe points when the go code was issued. Now, once they fly beyond fail-safe, they do not require a second order to proceed. They will continue until they reach the target.
Then why haven't you radioed the planes countermanding the go code?
Well, I'm afraid we're unable to communicate with any of the aircraft.
Why?
As you may recall, sir, one of the provisions of Plan R provides that once the go code is received, the normal SSB radios in the aircraft are switched into a special coded device, which I believe is designated as CRM-114. Now, in order to prevent the enemy from issuing fake or confusing orders, CRM-114 is designed not to receive at all, unless the message is preceded by the correct three-letter code group prefix.
Then do you mean to tell me, General Turgidson, that you will be unable to recall the aircraft?
That's about silent. However, we are plowing through every possible three-letter combination of code. But since there are 17,000 permutations, it's going to take us about 2.5 days to transmit them all.
How soon did you say the planes would penetrate Russian radar cover?
About 18 minutes now.
Are you in contact with General Ripper?
No, sir, no. General Ripper sealed off the base and cut off all communication.
Where did you get all this information?
General Ripper called Strategic Air Command headquarters shortly after he issued the go-code. I have a portion of the transcript of that conversation. If you'd like me to read it.
Read it.
The duty officer asked General Ripper to confirm the fact that he had issued the go-code, and he said,
Yes, gentlemen, they are on their way in, and no one can bring them back. For the sake of our country and our way of life, I suggest you get the rest of SAC in after them. Otherwise, we will be totally destroyed by red retaliation. My boys will give you the best kind of start, 1,400 megatons worth. And you sure as hell won't stop them now. So let's get going. There's no other choice. God willing, we will prevail in peace and freedom from fear and in true health through the purity and essence of our natural fluid. God bless you all. Then he hung up. We're still trying to figure out the meaning of that last phrase, sir.
There's nothing to figure out, General Turgidson. This man is obviously a psychotic.
I'd hold off judgment on a thing like that, sir, until all the facts are in.
General Turgidson, when you instituted the human reliability tests, you assured me there was no possibility of such a thing ever occurring.
Well, I don't think it's quite fair to condemn the whole program because of a single slip-up.
Thank you.
what time it is now. Shameless file time. And on the shameless file, what we're going to cover is how there is truly no honor amongst thieves. Chalabee versus Sam. You know, this may take the all-time list for shamelessness. Because it's clear that empires and rulers and other thieves know no shame. Boy George and company, one-time confidant, bed partner, and icon of new imperialism in Iraq's strategy, Mr. Chalabee, Ahmed Chalabee, is now in bad company. He's in the same bad company that Saddam and Osama are in. Now, one must ask, how did he find himself in such bad company this quick? Usually you have to play the role of, some kind of a dictator for a dozen years or so. And then as political winds shift and other dynamics take place in the empire, no longer feels it needs you anymore, then it just pulls out a laundry list of things that it has collaborated with you on and massacring and oppressing people, and then says that you're the next Hitler, you know. So Nassar was the Hitler of the Nile, and what's his name? Saddam was the Hitler of Iraq, and Noriega was the Hitler of Panama, and all of that type of stuff. But Chalabee didn't get the chance to reach that state because, unfortunately for him, he did not get put into a position where he was able to lead a terrorist state. He just was a lackey. But to get into how some of this stuff fell out, let's go into what a spokesman for Ahmed Chalabee is saying and why... Now, Chalabee himself wants Sam out of Iraq. So, let's see what these criminals are up to, and we'll take it from there. Check this out.
The relation between the CPA, the Coalition Provisional Authority, and Chalabee has been disconnected.
Will it ever be reconnected?
No, because we hope that the occupation will end soon and we will have our sovereignty. This raid today was politically motivated to stop Chalabee from his Iraqi national interests to do whatever the Iraqi people wants, which is sovereignty.
All right, but his name wasn't even on the warrant. Are you telling me tonight that he felt personally targeted by this raid?
Yeah, well, when somebody enters your bedroom, I think you should believe that you've been targeted. I mean, they enter his bedroom with pistols on his head.
But the U.S. government official said late this afternoon, in fact, what they were going after was one of his aides, who they believe had ties to Iranian intelligence. You don't buy that?
Well, because there's a conflicting story within the story. Dan Senor and General Kimmis says it's an Iraqi raid, it's an Iraqi operation. On the other side, they said there is a connection to Iranian... I mean, let's rest to one story. It seems that people cannot get their grip even on one story, which means the whole thing is a lie.
Now, this is somewhat comical, because both sides are putting out allegations and calling each other liars and stuff. And basically what has happened is their house of cards has collapsed on their ass. When the Iraqi people threw up the resistance, basically the party was over. And their collaborative bank robbery expedition started to melt and dissolve like the Wicked Witch of the West when she had some water threw on her by Dorothy. Now, since they're all fledging away, trying to find ways to position themselves, meaning Chalabee and Sam, you got Boy George and company trying to make things look like it's going A-OK, everything's going smooth and stuff like that. Now, Chalabee has to try to position himself because he's going to be left ass out. You know, he can easily get his head shot off if he doesn't look out. So now he has to position himself as more down with the Iraqi people. Now he's against occupation. Mm-hmm. Now he's down for the cause. Now he's some militant, all this type of stuff. Mm-hmm. So he's had to, posture himself in this tone because he knows that Sam don't give a damn about him. Sam, at the end of the day, is going to cut the throat of anyone, including some of their his former allies. This is why it's a fantasy to think that Sam is always somewhat irrational, or to believe that why would he cut his friend's throat or cut his friends loose who've been so obliging to him. That don't mean nothing to Sam. He's looking out for his own interests. And if you outwarn your interests, well, for him, that's it. So now, some of the stuff that is being said about so-called evidence or possible evidence, you know, a Chalabi-Iranian connection, it's almost as if they went and got some of the documents that Chalabi used to say about Saddam and other people within the Ba'ath Party, and use that information that Chalabi used to make up and spread to try to delegitimize the Iraqi government, so that the U.S. government can have a more legitimate stance on attacking them. So now what has happened is they just basically are using the same type of fake source material, so-called evidence, and now saying Chalabi is alleged to be giving information to Iranian officials, that Chalabi may be stealing money, that Chalabi may be doing this and that. This is this is the same type of stuff they were saying about Saddam. Saddam had ties to Al-Qaeda. Saddam and Osama were in bed together. Saddam was building a nuclear plant right before our eyes, etc. There is no honor and shame amongst thieves.
Well, I'm going to tell you what, though. When you talk about Chalabi trying to posture like a militant, I ain't got but three words for that. It won't work. This ain't like the United States in Iraq. Those people got a memory that goes beyond 72 hours. Chalabi was considered a national traitor by the overwhelming majority of Iraqis, whether or not they supported the Ba'athist Party. Reason being, first, homeboy left up out of Iraq and went to Jordan, right? Saddam ran him out. He went to Jordan. He robbed and stole. And
I don't know if he ran him out. He was like 12 when he left. He left in 1958.
Yeah, but okay.
I mean, his family may have, I don't know.
Okay,
but,
okay. Okay, you know. Valid point. But the point is, he did get involved in embezzlement and shit.
Oh, yeah.
And got ran out of Jordan.
Right.
This is later in his life. He wasn't no 12 years old when he embezzled in.
No, you said Iraq.
Right. But I think at least his family must have got ran out, because he claimed he got an axe to grind, all right? But dig this now. He come to the United States and they formed this phony CIA front called the Iraqi National Congress. And these are the people that was telling the United States through the CIA that they got, Saddam got the
atom bomb. No, not the CIA, through Office of Special Plans. Because, see, that's why the CIA doesn't like Chalabi. They were saying one thing. Rumsfeld wasn't liking the information that he was getting from the CIA. So he formed this new little group, Office of Special Plans. Chalabi's in with that whole crew. And then Chalabi is supposed to be their main man that is telling them all of this type of stuff.
And giving them disinformation. That's
intentionally.
That's right. And they used that disinformation because they felt, well, who would know better? This dude is from Iraq. Now, did they believe?
Right. Yeah, it is one of the keys. I mean, the reason why I pointed out is because it's important to show the split that is happening in some of the intelligence apparatus, because this is linked to the friction that is going on with Rumsfeld and colon cancer,
right,
and all of those types of things.
Oh, but the real lesson, though, you see here how little regard the imperialists have for their little dupes, because he was eating out their hand 3-4 years ago. In fact, for the last 15 years. And just so coldly, just they raided his house, tore his house up. I saw the pictures in the New York Times. Tore his house up. This is their humble servant. No. And as far as posturing as a militant, homeboy better get him a bike or a car, skit something, because he got to get gone. Because you can see he ain't going to last. He, without the protection of the U.S., he's finished.
Next, the CNN host asks Chalabi's spokesman, does he believe that the CIA is making evidence up? to get Chalabet. So let's see what these guys got to say about this. Check this out.
You're saying tonight that the CIA is making this up to get Amit Chalabet?
Yes, they made up so many things before. We've been used to it. They want to stop Ahmed Chalabet. They want to bring Ba'athists back to power. They want to stop the march towards democracy. Oh. They are clear about it. They are not even shy about it.
Well, we are told that part of the reason why this warrant was even issued in the first place were allegations that members of the Iraqi National Congress had misappropriated some government equipment and funds.
Well,
is there any truth to that?
Well, these are allegations. You just said it. It should be resolved by a court order. And if assume an American soldier makes violations or prison violations in Iraq, would you go up to raid, for example, the defense minister's house? It doesn't make sense. I think it's clearly a witch hunt. It's clearly a way to intimidate Chalabet and stop him from his Iraqi national agenda.
All right.
All right, so once again, you can see this is somewhat comical when you hear Chalabet, representative, talking about how yes, that they believe that the CIA is out to get him and all of that, which is true, you know. But this is only coming out because of the resistance that's taking in the same way during the Vietnam War. If the Vietnam War had gone smoothly, i.e. the U.S. imperialist class just crushed the Vietnamese into submission, you wouldn't have seen all of those splits take place that took place years later. But once the resistance maintained and polarized the situation, and more of the type of insidious things that the U.S. often gets involved in start to seep out, i.e. the torture of the masses of prison inmates. Now, say everything had been contained and confined and they had already turned over power, quote unquote, you know, in other words, had this little kleptocracy government in Iraq turned over pseudo power to them and had them be the administrators of U.S. imperial rule and law. If all of that had already taken place and there was no mass resistance, this type of picture thing that came out with the soldiers could have more or less been swept under the rug. But since they're vibing for control, social control, the consciousness and the will of the people, since they're in such a vulnerable situation, the stuff this overrode them. And this is the contradiction and the problem that Chalabet and Sam find themselves in. Things have not gone to plan, so now they're basically throwing up on one another and trying to drown each other in their own bile.
Yeah, well, what I was getting ready to say before, though, Tracy, see, what is the name of that organization you say they set up to tell the lies?
Office of Special Plans.
Office of Special Plans. See, it don't matter what they call it, because here's the thing I think our listeners need to get. They used Chalabet because he was saying what they wanted to hear. In fact, truth be told, they might even told him what to say. We don't know. But the fact of the matter is, you see, he's not useful anymore. It's over. And that's why they just, man.
No, yeah, that's clear. I mean, I agree. Whatever name they call it is not essential. My whole point was that the split up had came from a dynamic and has helped polarize some of the contradictions and vulgarity that the administration had been engaged in. They were determined to have their war. And in the same way that when they sent that one-time ambassador to Iraq over to Niger, the same way when he came back with the wrong report, they just zoop, 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 and then just attacked him, scribbled some other stuff in, and then just had Boy George go with the program. You know,
precisely, precisely. But you know what? This is what we want you to generalize on, folks, that there's an important lesson. And the theoretical analysis that Tracy just made. And that is, insofar as there's no real struggle, the ruling class doesn't have that problem, and they don't polarize. So, for instance, here in America, that has led to the Republican and the Democratic Party have been moving closer and closer together now for 20 years, to the point now where you can't really, politically, you can't tell the difference. Curry ain't nothing but Bush Light. But you let some hard class struggles start to occur in this country. Massive strikes, student teach-ins, massive anti-war rallies, all kind of direct actions, etc., etc. You will very quickly see a falling out of thieves right here between these so-called Republicrats.
Now, next on CNN, it's asked about the missing government funds that are supposed to have leaked out of U.S. governmental pockets and into Chalabi's. Now, this is somewhat beyond sick, considering the fact that you've had Halliburton and Bechtel and all of these U.S. corporations steal left and right from the Iraqi people. We did a thing just last week on the Beyond the Shadow segment, which went into how your ignorance is no longer bliss, and how all of these documents had come out about how the Iraqi people and U.S. taxpayer have been getting ripped off by these corporations. But let's see how these clowns deal with this. Check this out.
Be solved in court, but you said with 100% certainty you believe that none of Mr. Chalabi's aides were involved with the Iranian intelligence in any way. Are you saying tonight, you can't tell me tonight whether you think there's any truth to these allegations, that some government funds were misappropriated through the INC? I want to know
these
what you
allegations,
think.
I mean, you are innocent until proven guilty. This should go through a court process, not to raid houses and break into bedrooms of a person who has nothing to do with the allegation. If he's not involved in these allegations, why are they raiding his room? Why didn't they show an arrest warrant? Why they broke the doors? Why they broke the furniture? I mean, Chalabi is calling for the transfer of the Iraqi treasury money, the DFI, the Development Fund of Iraq, and audited because of some, questionable spending by the CPA and also other sovereignty issues.
Mr. Kiber, I need a quick answer to this one. So in the end, if Mr. Chalabi has completely lost faith in the CPA, are we to be led to believe then that he might have been more comfortable having Saddam Hussein in power still?
No, he just said in his press conference, you heard it, he said, we are grateful to President Bush for helping us to remove Saddam. But unfortunately, what President Bush says doesn't get implemented by the CPA. They undermine it. They want to undermine sovereignty. They call it half sovereignty. There's no half sovereignty. It's either sovereignty or occupation. Let's be honest about it.
Now, you saw how the CNN host tried to link Saddam now with Chalabi. Chalabi has been the main proponent, or one of the main proponents, in getting Saddam out of power, because he basically wanted that position.
That's right.
Now, all of a sudden, since both of their homes, Sam's plantation home has blown up, and Chalabi's home is blowing up and is on fire with the help of Sam now, who's helped dislodge some of the home. Now, all of a sudden, they're trying to link Chalabi with Saddam. I mean, there's just no shame.
Sorry.
And sick. And what they're counting on is a gumpified U.S. population that have basically the analytical tools and a memory span of a goat and an ostrich. And that way, if your head's in the sand and all you can remember is the last time you butted heads with the next goat, well, then basically that they got you. And that's what they're counting on. There's no way that these thugs should be able to get up on any kind of major corporate or major news outlet and spew the type of stuff that they are back and forth. Actually, they both should be on trial and getting and getting lashed and exposed. But in this society, at least for now, whoo!
No, that I'm sorry, man. You know, you stop and think about that for a minute. Here's the number one Uncle Tom tattletale from Iraq. Look, y'all, I can't just go do a New York Times search and put his name in there and see the 80, 90 articles about him and all the so-called help he was giving to the Bush regime. And by the way, he didn't start with Bush. He was talking stuff, trying to incite Clinton. And they were taking all his lies and crap and foolishness as reality and printing it in newspapers as if it really meant something. And to now say that the man is working with Saddam, do y'all know that they stopped talking about Saddam? And you know why? The Russians claim that they ain't even got Saddam, that they got a double. Now, I don't know about that. That sounds far-fetched. But anything is possible, y'all. They lied. Look, check out this thing with the dude. What's his name? Dude, they just cut his head off, they say. Dig this. Was it Bert? Is it Bert? This is something that caught my attention, and I think it's important to share to show you how they deceive the American public. Right after this, all the pictures of the torture came out. They felt embattled. They're backing up. They're retreating. They're in trouble. Then all of a sudden, this thing about this guy's head getting cut off comes up. Well, people that saw the film informed me. I haven't seen it yet, to be honest. But that when they show the video and they cut the head off of the body, there's no gushing out of blood. Now, if you stop and think, if a person is alive and you cut their head off, what's going to happen is that jugular vein alone is going to cause an enormous amount of blood to just fly everywhere. There was no blood.
There's been a number of reports, especially outside of this country, by analysts who said that this thing does not look real. It looks staged. And they also commented on, the jumpsuit that the guy was wearing.
How it was orange.
Yeah, and it was the same jumpsuit that a number of the people who were in that little prison. And,
exactly. Iraqis don't use that, don't have nothing like that.
Right. So,
Did they give him over? Did they hand him over and just tell the boys to get him, or what?
Well, many people were very suspect that the whole thing is just staged.
Very possible. But that's yet another thing.
And there's a lot of question about this guy, himself, his background. You know, what's going on? He
look like a fool to me. Go over there thinking he's going to make some money, ain't got no connections. Come on.
He may have some connections, but they may not be the type of outward connections that,
okay.
Yeah.
But dig this here, y'all, to give you an example of Americans' lack of reasoning ability, okay? You have this situation now where they are going to prosecute. They are prosecuting these six or seven servicemen, right? Okay. Now, around the halls of the Pentagon, a term of caustic derision has emerged for the enlisted soldiers at the heart of the furor over the Abu Ghraib prison scandal. They call them the six morons who lost the war. Now, indeed, the damage done to the United States military and the nation as a whole by the horrifying photographs that we've all seen of U.S. soldiers torturing Iraqi detainees at the notorious prison is incalculable. They don't know how much they... But the folks in the Pentagon are talking about the wrong morons. And they got folks talking about this as if that's those scapegoats. And remember, if you recall, a couple of weeks ago, I made this point. Can anybody in their right mind really believe that was the only place this stuff was happening? With all of this new information that's coming out.
Well, I mean, just last week we did the thing where I played the girl who was at the other prison camp. And they went into all of the type of stuff that they were doing there. Right. There's even a documentary out about Afghanistan on how they disappeared about 3,000 Taliban guys. They kept them in these little carts, enclosed carts. They were screaming for water or any kind of food, and then they just machine gun hold the container that they were in without any concern about hitting them, and led them on their basically a Taliban Trail of Tears type of escapade, brought them to this location, shot them on the site, and then just covered them up, left them there. They're doing all types of brutality and torture. And as Seymour Hersh's new article is outlining, this stuff had come down from Rumsfeld himself, who said, we're going to get tough on these guys. We're going to break them,
exactly.
Embarrass them,
exactly.
Humiliate them. torture them. And they just went full throttle speed ahead.
Now, see, the reason I brought this up, we're going to go back to Chalabi now. But I only brought this up to show you the tendency of Americans to accept the okey-doke, in this case, scapegoating. Petty, crazy, irrational scapegoating. Anybody that believed that Chalabi was working with Saddam Hussein, this is an insult to Americans.
Or we prefer Saddam still be in power. Now, next to crazy. Next to CBS, on CBS, another station, their news department goes into the serious problem Chalabi has with Sam and the new problem with Iran that's being fomented. So check this out.
As we mentioned at the top of the broadcast, there's much more to this Chalabi story than the raid. CBS News 60 Minutes correspondent Leslie Stahl is here tonight with exclusive information. Leslie?
Dan, the raid today was about charges of torture against Chalabi's colleagues. But we have learned that Chalabi himself has serious problems with the U.S. government. U.S. officials at a senior level told us today that they have evidence Chalabi has been passing highly classified U.S. intelligence to Iran. The evidence shows that Chalabi personally gave Iranian intelligence officers information so sensitive that if revealed, it could, quote, get Americans killed. The evidence is said to be rock solid. According to our sources, a high-level investigation is underway into who in the U.S. government gave Chalabi such sensitive information in the first place. In addition, our sources say that one of Chalabi's closest confidants, a senior member of his organization, the Iraqi National Congress, is believed to have been recruited by Iran's intelligence agency and is on its payroll. Needless to say, this has damaged Chalabi's once close relationship with top officials at the Pentagon, like Defense Secretary Rumsfeld and his number two, Paul Wolfowitz, who promoted Chalabi against the advice of the State Department and the CIA. Pentagon officials once saw Chalabi as the man to lead a free Iraq. We reached one of Chalabi's closest aides tonight, who told us these new charges are, quote, nonsense, and are part of a witch hunt by the CIA to discredit Chalabi. Dan?
Leslie Stahl, thanks. You may want to note that at least one Iraqi newspaper estimates 14,000 intelligence agencies from Iran have penetrated Iraq's new security forces. U.S. military and intelligence sources have indicated to CBS News they believe that figure may be what they call a fair estimate. They are and have been for some time deeply concerned about Iran's influence inside Iraq and the potential that presents for involvement in violence against U.S. forces. American intelligence sources have told CBS News that one of Iran's goals, now that its enemy Saddam is gone, is to create trouble for the U.S. and to keep it pinned down in order to divert America's attention from Iran's nuclear program.
All right, you see what's happening. Now they're buffering up this Iran scare, that Iran's nuclear program. They're linking Chalabi to Iran. So they're going to get two in one stone. These are criminals. These are criminals.
But it's crazy, too, though, a little bit. It's kind of silly.
It's, I would say, people throughout most of the world are laughing hysterically. Unfortunately, the gumps on Sam's plantation are probably buying more duct tape, thinking that Iran is going to send a nuclear missile over into America by sundown. You know, in the same way they believe that Saddam had the capability and had the means and et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So you heard them. Highly classified intelligence information has come out that Chalabi gave classified intelligence to Iran, and that the intelligence community says that the evidence is rock solid. These are criminals. And it just helps expose that there is no honor, none, amongst thieves. Hold on a sec.
President. There are one or two points I'd like to make, if I may.
Go ahead, General.
One. Our hopes for recalling the 843rd bomb wing are quickly being reduced to a very low order of probability. Two. In less than 15 minutes from now, the Ruskies will be making radar contact with the planes. Three. When they do, they are going to go absolutely ape, and they're going to strike back with everything they got. Four. If, prior to this time, we have done nothing further to suppress their retaliatory capabilities, we will suffer virtual annihilation. Now. Five. If, on the other hand, we were to immediately launch an all-out and coordinated attack on all their airfields and missile bases, we'd stand a damn good chance of catching them with their pants down. Hell, we got a 5-to-1 missile superiority as it is. We could easily assign 3 missiles to every target and still have a very effective reserve force for any other contingency. Six, an unofficial study which we undertook of this eventuality indicated that we would destroy 90% of their nuclear capabilities. We would therefore prevail and suffer only modest and acceptable civilian casualties from the remaining force, which would be badly damaged and uncoordinated.
General, it is the avowed policy of our country never to strike first with nuclear weapons.
Well, President, I would say that General Ripper has already invalidated that policy.
That was not an act of national policy, and there are still alternatives left open to us.
Mr. President, we are rapidly approaching a moment of truth, both for ourselves as human beings and for the life of our nation. Now, truth is not always a pleasant thing. But it is necessary now to make a choice, to choose between two admittedly regrettable, but nevertheless distinguishable post-war environments. One, where you got 20 million people killed, and the other where you got 150 million people killed.
You're talking about mass murder, General, not war.
Mr. President, I'm not saying we wouldn't get a hair must. But I do say no more than 10 to 20 million killed, top, depending on the break.
I will not go down in history as the greatest mass murderer since Adolf Hitler.
Perhaps it might be better, Mr. President, if you were more concerned with the American people than with your image in a history book.
Anything worse than what is on the way?
Next, we're going to go into a Ruins of Empire segment. And what we're going to deal with is another somewhat comical episode that's breaking loose. It's the NBA basketball players who are getting cold high-top tennis shoes over going and playing basketball in Greece in the Summer Olympic Games. Basically, I'm just going to play this report, and you'll be able to get what's going on, and we'll take it from there. Check this out.
In Madrid, even Athens felt the reverberations of terrorist bombs earlier this month.
We live in a world now where images of things happening around the world are on your front door every morning now.
Well, that is a major concern because, you know, as much as the Olympics is about, you know, the sport and about your country, there are, you know, a little bit more important things that are going on in the world.
Oh, yeah, I think security is a major issue, not just for me, but with America, too, you know. Kids, it's on everybody's mind. It's definitely a mama.
The security concerns that players have are not unlike the security concerns that all of us will have when we go to Athens. The world has changed, and you know, we all have to have a certain heightened awareness of you know, the way where we walk and the way we carry ourselves and where we elect to go. And that's true in this country. It's true in countries around the world, and certainly will be true in Athens. We need to be aware.
Several players, including Tracy McGrady and Karl Malone, have reportedly expressed anxiety about playing in Greece. As Pacers center Jermaine O'Neal, who has committed to play, said recently, quote, "No matter how much security you have, you can't stop people from strapping bombs to their bodies."
This is all new to Jermaine. You know, he's never been a part of one of these teams, one of these Olympic teams. And I think once he's had the opportunity to do that, he would understand that we do a lot of things to make sure that he's going to be secure.
Jermaine, don't believe him. Keep your black ass here. Believe me. You ain't got no business going over there representing Sam. You're going to look like, you could look like a piece of burnt up toast. No one cares about Sam no more. There's the fog of illusion, the fog of a democratic society, the pressures that Sam has put on the world population, creating a globalized hell on earth, a giant Indian reservation. People all over the world are more than willing to attack any symbols of Sam.
Like,
and
you.
And you running around with a flag draped around your back. You know how they do that in Olympics. You may have one on your coffin coming back here.
Right.
Keep your black ass home. I'm being real about it. Keep your black ass home. Look, you got millions of dollars in the bank, and there's no way even the most ridiculous bling bling Negro funeral is not going to be able to spend all that money if you get yourself killed over there. It's not necessary.
And it ain't worth it.
Sam, Boy George and his empire are nothing you should be dying over. Now, if you're trying to overthrow it, that's worth dying for. But if you're there to represent and have a flag wound up your behind like a fool, which basically means you got a bullseye on your head, don't do it.
Let it go.
Now, next, here comes some of the quotes of some of the players that brings out the fact that they are a little bit more aware of the situation than they usually let on. Check this out.
The players and their families will stay on a cruise ship off the Greek coast while being protected by Greek and American authorities during the games. Those arrangements seemed unsettling to Ray Allen, who told the Associated Press, quote, "The only thing I can think of is the battleship that got blown up. They came up on the side of the USS Cole in a little boat."
We're going to have unbelievable security there, and it's going to be as safe as it can be. But I think as a, you know, as a parent, having a family and a wife and kids, is that I'm never going to put them in a situation that I don't have to.
I was already thinking about it before this happened, before this bombing. So, you know, it's a big event worldwide. So it draws a lot of attention. So you kind of think that it's a good place for them.
Bad things can happen here too, so that's a bad excuse.
When it comes to excuses for not playing for Team USA, Larry Brown has heard them all. Kidd has a sore knee. Kenyon Martin needs to stay stateside to deal with his impending free agency. And Shaquille O'Neal says he's waiting to see how far the Lakers advance in the playoffs.
Can't get mad at them if they don't, though, you know. Because if you're in the playoffs, your ultimate goal is to win an NBA championship. I don't care. Don't nothing replace an NBA championship. Not even the gold medal.
But they're not all playing for the championship. Vince Carter and Ray Allen say that wedding plans will keep them from making the trip. Once, say maybe 12 years ago, it would have been unthinkable for a player to choose nuptials over the quest for Olympic gold. But today's NBA players seem to have different priorities than their original Dream Team counterparts. And representing the red, white, and blue may not be at the top of the list.
Usually, the first time you ask a guy, his first time through, usually he does it without hesitation. Well, second and third time, injuries start cropping up, other appointments start cropping up. You see a lot of things start coming up.
It bothers me. It bothers me a lot of guys, you know, that don't take it as a responsibility to represent our league. You know, I see all these foreign kids that they all want to do it. It's almost more important to them to represent their country than to play in the NBA.
We couldn't make it. I'm from Turkey, you know. That's my dream, too. I want to play one day in Olympic.
Mehmet Okur has his own wedding plans this summer. But he says if Turkey had qualified for the Games, matrimony would have had to wait.
I'm getting married too this summer. And let's say we play Olympic this summer. I'm not thinking about my marriage. I'm going to first my country and I feel first national team, then my wedding.
I played for 15 years for my country, so and I'm proud of it. You know, it's different feeling. You don't play for your contract. You don't play for your money. You play for the people.
For European guys, it's going to be much more difficult to say, "Oh, I don't want to play for Italy or Spain or France," because over there it's a big deal, national team. So it's going to be hard.
Yet Parker does acknowledge that the specter of terrorism is a frightening issue for the players, even for those who are not Americans.
I have to be careful. I'm happy that we're not qualified. I'm not going to be there.
Timberwolves coach Flip Saunders says the recent death of former NFL player Pat Tillman has had a chilling effect on all athletes, bringing home the security issue for them like never before.
Do you buy that guys realize that, you know, this is real, you could die there?
I guess so. But I also think you ought to think about what he sacrificed, you know, to go over there. You know, they call it harm's way. He went in harm's way. We're just going to represent our country in the Olympics.
Nah, he was in war, man. He was in war. You understand that? Somebody was shooting at him. He was shooting back. It's a little different than going over there to play basketball.
Look. Tillman was a fool, so he can just go ahead and get in his little casket. Well, he's already in there, so enough about him. All of this nonsense about, nothing can replace a championship and all. Nothing can replace your life. Keep your ass home, period. Today's NBA players have different priorities. Yeah, and the main one should be staying alive. Keep your ass home. Now, you heard them talk about it's going to be unbelievable security. And the players and their wives are going to be out on the cruise ships. That means they already got intel information that there's going to be attacks or attempted attacks. They're just not telling anyone.
They're fronting you off.
Yeah. They're fronting you. They're playing you. Why they have all of these Navy SEAL guys and all this guard in the ship? On TV, they showed a picture where it's this big-ass, almost looked like a warship out in the water, and all these Navy SEAL guys, you know, with the whole get up on and water and stuff with machine guns all around and stuff like that. That's what you want to go to during your summer vacation? That's how you want to live?
8x8 room now, where you could touch the walls. It's like a jail cell.
Now, we saw how Boy George and him responded to the intel information that they were obviously getting before 911. Keep your ass home.
Oh, yeah.
Keep your black ass home.
No, you know what, Tracy? You're absolutely right. Stop and think about this a minute. But there's a good side to this. I knew that a lot of these brothers had been to college, and therefore, while they rarely say anything, it's very rare when a basketball player come up really hard. You know, last time that happened, that was, you know, Brother Muhammad, remember, and he collapsed. But, you know, Nash came out and said, yo, this Iraq war? Nah. They tried to talk stuff about him, but he just, you know, he held his little line, went on, took care of his business. Why would American basketball players, predominantly black, not have the patriotic fervor to go and be a front to get your dumb ass blowed up for nothing for Imperial? Why would we? Well, could it be because we black? Because people have looked around and figured out a couple of things?
Now, this is his second year in the NBA. But the thing I did was when he was in high school and how he was getting manipulated by Nike corporations and all of these little really low-life coaches who were trying to get him to go to their particular teams. So he went to one high school, and the high school he was at, they refused to give the transcript over so he couldn't play. And then when they gave it over, they doctored it to make his GPA average below 2.0, thereby disqualifying him from being eligible. Now, they doctored it themselves. And then when they were confronted with it by someone, they said, I don't want to talk about Stoudemire and all of that. Now, my whole point in doing that particular segment was a couple of reasons. One, Stoudemire skipped college. Now, you often have people complaining about these athletes skipping college. Well, after his high school experience, what do you expect?
That's right.
But also, it got into the insidious aspect of how these corporations with corporate influence play a very disastrous role on the psyche of teenagers who are coming up. His mother was in prison at the time, so...
Stoudemire?
Yeah, so they didn't want her to get out. All she needed was $1,000 bail. But... see, the coach didn't want to give her $1,000 because they all knew that if she got out, she would take control and she would be the buffer between all of those low lives that were trying to manipulate Stoudemire from one high school to another, one shoe contract to another. It's just this whole insidious thing where you had a bunch of old ass, sorry grown men manipulating this 15, 16 year old at the time. That was some sick stuff. So here you go through that type of experience. You see that going on, and then you get into the pros, and then you got all of these little punk commentators on TV doubting your integrity and your heart if you're not playing well with a blown out knee and calling you, he's not a winner, and all of this, you know.
Worse than that, remember what they were calling it. They were calling it because Stoudemire and Rasheed Wallace were smoking a little herb in Rasheed's car.
This is a different Stoudemire.
No.
This is not the Stoudemire.
Stoudemire from Phoenix.
Right, right.
Okay. But they did call Stoudemire and Wallace the jailblazers.
Yeah, but that's a different Stoudemire. Right, right, right. The Stoudemire I'm talking about has been in the NBA for 2 years.
Right.
He got Rookie of the Year last year. He was the first... player to get Rookie of the Year who skipped college and came straight from high school to the pros. And, from all accounts, you know, he has a pretty level head, et cetera, et cetera. But he's already been through all of the sloth.
They don't show their ass.
Yeah, that the corporate overlords have to expose about themselves. So many of these guys just know it's a business. And they just say, look, you know, I'm going to keep my distance. They seen when Chris Webber got hurt. This is after he left the Warriors, and he got hurt in a game. He like dislocated his shoulder. This is at the Oakland Coliseum. The audience was laughing at him, happy. Skip these low life, you know. You got fans in Denver who were throwing ice rocks at the Oakland Raiders. Some had batteries in the little ice rocks, you know, with snow and stuff like that. These people often look at professional athletes as some kind of subhuman animals at a zoo that they can treat any way that they want. I've done a number of commentaries on different subject matters concerning sports, you know, the one on Mike Tyson, an earful of American savagery is more than what Mike Tyson could ever bite off. The Pledge of Allegiance to this rag, on the Mohamed Abdul-Raul situation, on and on. I show how this country, these fools within this country, are in no position to be berating anyone's conduct, including the athletes. Hold on a sec. Oh, athletes, keep your ass here.
Rocky Flats was established in 1951 when the United States, you know, made a decision to build up its nuclear weapons arsenals and needed a factory that would mass produce plutonium bombs. And those plutonium bombs became detonators for thermonuclear bombs. The plutonium bomb that we're talking about is equivalent to the bomb that destroyed Nagasaki. So, you know, in terms of thermonuclear weapons, which are about 1,000 times more explosive than the bomb that destroyed Nagasaki, you know, the plutonium bombs are, quote, relatively small. But they're used to trigger these bombs. So Rocky Flats came into being. The headline on the Denver Post the morning after the afternoon after the press conference was held read, "There's good news today. U.S. to build $40 million A-bomb plant." So this was regarded as, you know, a jobs creator for the Denver area. And indeed, over, you know, the next four decades, you know, billions of dollars went into the Denver economy. The problem was that for much of that period, you know, especially the first part of the period, people didn't realize that there were releases from Rocky Flats. There were fires that had taken place, plutonium fires. In 1969, on Mother's Day, in May, so 35 years ago, a plutonium building containing more than 7,000 pounds of plutonium caught fire. Plutonium, one of its other delightful aspects is that it combusts spontaneously in air. So the plutonium fire burned, the building nearly collapsed, the roof nearly went off, and even a government official a year later said, you know, we came close to losing that building, and if that had happened, hundreds of square miles would have been contaminated. So you had very high risk at Rocky Flats. You had regular releases of plutonium that were monitored. You had waste that was stored outside in barrels, something called the 903 pad. The winds, you know, distributed that plutonium off-site at Rocky Flats. So, you know, you basically had a situation where you had both a local hazard and a global threat.
Well, the way I got involved is that I received a letter in the mail one day to report to grand jury duty. Grand jury is selected from the citizens of Colorado, and I was randomly selected to be on that. No special talents or ability did I bring to it, strictly random selection. Then after about 3 or 4 months into it, I became the foreman. Kind of by default, the other foreman resigned, couldn't do it. So we heard all of the testimony.
Mr. McKinley and his other cohorts in the grand jury were convened from 1989 to 92 to look at purported criminal activity at the Rocky Flats nuclear weapons plant. And as their book chronicles, the U.S. Justice Department actually sold them down the river. At the end of their term of service, Mike Norton, then the U.S. attorney for this region, essentially cut a deal with Rockwell International that would not give them any criminal liability, which is what the grand jurors sought, but instead would fine them several million dollars, and then they'd be off the hook for any other types of liability. And now the concern is what's being done with the Rocky Flats nuclear weapons plant, whether it has been adequately cleaned up. Many of us in this region around the country say, no, it is not. And in fact, we believe that there's an effort to suppress the extent of information about the extent of the plutonium contamination at that area, the extent of off-site contamination by plutonium. In fact, Dr. Helen Caldicott, who founded the Physicians for Social Responsibility, has said publicly that she believes the entire Denver metropolitan area should not be inhabited because of the disposition of plutonium that occurred from the fires in 1957 and 1969. But it's actually worse than that because Rocky Flats was also hauling waste off-site up to 30 miles away from the Rocky Flats plant here near Boulder. It was actually hauling it out to eastern Colorado in a dump site called the Lowry Landfill, taking tons of waste. There's 2 tons of plutonium missing from the Rocky Flats nuclear weapons plant, missing and unaccounted for, the government admits. And in an investigation that I've been involved in since 1996 on behalf of sewage plant workers, we've unraveled a troubling tale of the fact that Rocky Flats was taking waste to this dump, Lowry Landfill, which is now a Superfund site. And secretly, the polluters at the site with the government entered into a deal where they would flush it into public sewer lines. And then from there, it would be trucked out and used as farm fertilizer on agricultural fields out in eastern Colorado that are growing food crops for America. And furthermore, just in recent months, they've also concocted a plan where they're taking the water from the sewage facility that is commingled with the Lowry Landfill waste that does include radioactive waste, and it's being rerouted now onto parks in Denver, playgrounds in Denver, and starting this month, it's even going to be used as irrigation water at the Denver Zoo. And this is the only place in the United States of America where there's been a permit issued to allow plutonium and other nuclear waste to be released from a Superfund site for end use as farm fertilizer and recycled water to irrigate public parks and recreation area. Unprecedented anywhere else in the country. The only other place in the U.S. where the EPA is trying to do this is in New Jersey, at a Superfund site there. And the governor of New Jersey is standing up screaming about this. They're fighting over this in court. Well, the Gems Landfill in Camden County, New Jersey, and there's tremendous newspaper coverage of this in New Jersey, yet here the Denver Post and the Rocky Mountain News have refused to report about the documented evidence about this. Dean Singleton, who's the head of the media news group here, in our investigation we found actually is part of the problem, part of the deal. And the deal was that the polluters paid into a common fund secretly. And the Denver Post and the Rocky Mountain News, our two major newspapers here, both had dumped toxic waste at Lowry Landfill as well. Dumped printing inks and solvents, and sometimes those can contain PCBs. They dumped a relatively small amount, given what Coors dumped, who was the top polluter at the site, and other companies, including Mark Marietta from the Titan Missile Factory here, the Rocky Mountain Arsenal dumped waste at Lowry Landfill, and trucking records show that Rocky Flats, for years, took waste out there as well, unidentified waste. The problem, though, is that the newspapers, as jointly liable parties at the Superfund site, they themselves had done a secret deal to pay into a fund This was revealed by Pulitzer Prize-winning investigative reporter Eileen Welson, and it's been reported about in a three-part series called Dirty Secrets. Very excellent file book, The Plutonium Files, is required reading for my students on campus. But Ms. Welson and I had worked together about the evidence around this and found that the newspapers had engaged in these secret deals as well. And the newspapers knew that radioactive premiums were being offered to the polluters to escape liability for the radioactive component of Lowry Landfill. The polluters at the site, the city of Denver, owns the Superfund site. It was also operated by Waste Management, Inc., which has been associated with organized crime around the country. Those two parties together created a secret trust and then went and asked corporations to pay into the fund to help them with the cleanup at the site. The newspapers were part of that deal, and the city and Waste Management, Inc. offered radioactive premiums, that if the companies would pay a radioactive premium, then they would be held harmless and off the hook if and when the public learned that the site was radioactive with plutonium and other waste. Dean Singleton at the Denver Post did not pay a radioactive premium, and so therefore, if the public were to be effective in urging that there be a more effective cleanup to handle the nuclear waste component of the Superfund site, then the newspapers would also be on the hook for that liability. And so they have had a disinterest in reporting the evidentiary trail that we've discovered about the plutonium at the site. 90% of their nuclear capabilities. We would therefore prevail and suffer only modest and acceptable civilian casualties from the remaining force, which would be badly damaged and uncoordinated.
General, it is the avowed policy of our country never to strike first with nuclear weapons. Well, Mr. President, I would say that General Ripper has already invalidated that policy.
Brothers and sisters, and friends, and I see some enemies. In fact, I think we'd be fooling ourselves if we had an audience this large and didn't realize that there were some enemies present.
Good evening, brothers and sisters. I'm Gerald Smith, and here's your Making It Plain News service. First of all, you know, who is the terrorist, my brothers and sisters? Washington and the opposition in Venezuela are behind the terrorist plot against Hugo Chavez. Right now, it's hard to believe the nerve of these people. Washington, they done caught these paramilitaries in Venezuela. Get this. The arrests near Caracas, which is the capital of Venezuela, on Sunday. All right, we're talking now actually last Sunday, okay? Of up to 80 Colombian paramilitaries linked to the political opposition in Venezuela confirms suspicions that the counter-revolution in Venezuela is resorting to ever more desperate and violent measures to overthrow the government of Hugo Chavez. Reports from Caracas state that the Colombians had been arrested in a dawn raid on a farm on the outskirts of the capital, Caracas, belonging to a Cuban exile. You hear that? During his weekly radio and TV broadcast, President Chavez, that is the president of Venezuela, said that 53 paramilitary fighters were arrested at the farm early on Sunday, and another 24 were picked up after fleeing into the countryside. Officials say that 90 people have been detained altogether, although some arrests may have been made later. Another 40 people are still being sought. That's what they talk about terrorism. That's the United States organizing that, let me tell you. Because ain't no opposition in Venezuela got the juice to pull together those paramilitaries from Colombia. That's Sam with the CIA. And all in the middle of that. But they want to fight terror. They are the terrorists. Well, let's come on home and look at it. How do they use this anti-terror here in America? anti-terror charges used on gang members. 19 members of a street gang accused of menacing their neighborhood have been indicted on murder and other charges as acts of terror. Believed to be the first time that the state has used the anti-terrorism law against a gang. Well, feel safe yet? And lastly, the Kings of Pain ain't limited to just framing up street gang people. When they get your black ass in jail, here's what they got for you. We're talking about the people that are supposed to be against terrorism, right? The Litany of Horrors. This is the City Detention Center in Baltimore. At the Baltimore City Detention Center reads like something out of Charles Dickens. The short list. Officials who routinely take life-sustaining prescription drugs away from new detainees, who then go weeks or even months without proper medical attention. A woman who slipped and fell in the shower, breaking her arm, waited 2 weeks before she got her arm x-rayed and a cast put on it. Inmates who must wash their clothes in toilets, complaining that if they use the prison laundry service, their clothes aren't returned. Detainees subjected to severe overcrowding, putting them in close proximity to others with serious medical and mental health needs that largely go unmet. Who are the terrorists?
Is this in Iraq or
Baltimore, Maryland, U.
S.A. That's all you needed to say.
Well, people should be aware that for 8 days in May, the independent truckers closed the Port of Oakland. The Port of Oakland was virtually shut down by truckers striking for better conditions. The same port had been closed down by anti-war protesters just 3 weeks before. So a small contingent of the Direct Action to Stop the War, along with BASO, the Bay Area Strike Support Organization, joined the strikers at a community support and basically were out there picketing with them. On May the 22nd, which is, May the 22nd is Sunday, isn't it? Gosh, the 22nd is not Tuesday, I think. Okay, it's Saturday. Yeah, Saturday, May 22nd. The UC Berkeley Labor Center will host a conference on black labor activism. This is going to be a conference on black labor activism. The conference, quote, to improve the quality of jobs in the black community, a conference on organizing among African-American workers will culminate a year-long investigation of black worker organizing and will have sessions on black activism in unions, labor community alliances, new union organizing, community-based worker organizing. Joining Bay Area participants will be national activists who had advised this project, including Bill Fletcher, the president of Trans Africa Forum, Dennis Orton, Black Workers for Justice, Anthony Thingper, who is the chair of Agenda, and Susan Washington, the assistant to the AFL-CIO Executive Vice President Linda Chavez Thompson. The conference will culminate in a discussion of specific steps to improve the quality and the quantity of organizing among African-American workers. Now, tomorrow, I'm asking y'all out there to join us at a historic kickoff rally of the Million Worker March on Wednesday in the District of Columbia, Washington, D.C. I'm sorry. That is, it will take place October the 16th in Washington, D.C. Come learn about it, and here's how you do it. Saturday, that is tomorrow. No, it's not tomorrow. It's not the 22nd. The 22nd, excuse me. Saturday, the May 22nd at 8 p.m. Okay, tomorrow is the 22nd, so it looks like we got two things going on same day here. The Conference on Black Labor Activism is going to start at the DoubleTree Hotel in Berkeley, and it's going to be from 9 a.m. to 3:30 p.m. Participants can register in advance at the Labor Center. For more information, Steve Pitts, 510, area code 643-6815. That is tomorrow. Okay. So there you have it for your information. Okay? Now, tomorrow also at 8 o'clock p.m. at the International Longshoremen and Warehousemen's Local 10 Hiring Hall, which is located 400 North Point at Mason in San Francisco. The Million Worker March will be kicked off. That is the historic rally to kick off the Million Worker March. There'll be welcoming remarks from Henry Graham, the president of the ILWU. Danny Glover will be there, along with many, many others. Ralph Shulman, the co-producer of Pacifica's Taking Aim and Guns and Butter. Alexander Coburn, editor of Counterpunch, and also columnist for The Nation magazine. That's going to be all right now for the Making the Plain News. I just want you to know that you do have an alternative come this November. Marsha Feinland is running for Senate for the Peace and Freedom Party. You do have an alternative. That'll be all.
That's just gonna about wrap it up with Slade tonight. As we see Chalabi and Sam basically parting ways, like some mystical man called Moses supposedly parted the Red Sea. One has to ask, in the same way that the mystics in their invisible man fairy tales are allowed to get away with that type of stuff, why is that these clowns in America and for the U.S. imperialist killing machine are allowed to get away with the fables that they do, at least for now. Until the next time, slave revolt. Out.
Everybody listen to the BDP crew. We're not here for glamour or